Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest. Toll free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome to this Friday edition of Catholic Answers Live. My name is Patrick Coffin. Welcome aboard. We want to note at the top of the hour the passing of a rather famous Catholic priest whose writings from the perhaps early 60s until, I guess, about 10 years ago when he stopped writing at the same pace. He was a sociologist. He was a novelist and wrote some rather sexually frank novels, I would say. Father Andrew Greeley was found dead yesterday in his home in Chicago. He was 85 years old, so we pray for Father Greeley's soul. I have friends who didn't know him personally but thought a lot about his attempt to get outside the regular means by which priests communicate with varying degrees of success. He was certainly a man of the left in the Catholic Church in America, and but did a lot of sociological research and had a voice. So we pray for Father Greeley's soul and for the renewal of the priesthood everywhere. Today we're going to talk about radical traditionalism on the broadcast. Nice segue there from Father Greeley to radical traditionalism. We're going to do it for the entire show, both hours, on this phenomenon. We're going to define it, talk about the truth contained within it, and where it goes wrong and what to do about it when you encounter it. With us to do that is Tim Staples. He is the Director of Apologetics and Evangelization at Catholic Answers, and he is the author of many fine works, most of them audio products, and we'll talk about our gift for you today, gift of purchasing a subscription to Catholic Answers magazine. But without further ado, Tim Staples, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, it is good to be with you. I was expecting some applause, but gosh, I mean, we've got all these people here. Great. One person applauds.
That's really pity applause, isn't it?
Good to be with you, man.
That was actually a tape of your brother applauding for you.
That's right.
We acquired. Okay, well, let's talk about, I'll tell you what, first things first, we'll talk about radical traditionalism, and then at the end of the first break, we'll talk about this 4 gigabyte flash drive that we're giving away. And then at the first break of the second hour, we're going to announce the names of the winners of our shopping spree. 2 shopping spree plus our main prize for people who generously donated to our recent spring drive, the pledge drive to join the Catholic Answers Live Radio Club. So thank you to your generosity. It was really a great success, and thanks to your donations and your support, especially your prayers, we're able to be on the air today, and God willing, on Monday. Okay, Tim. Now, you did not come from a traditionalist background. You came from a Protestant context. You kind of floated around a little bit within the Protestant world, became a Catholic, and then caught fire as a Catholic and fell in love with apologetics. So here you are. But I know you've interacted with people in the radical traditionalist school. So let's delineate some definitions. A traditional Catholic is not what we're talking about. We are not talking about Catholics who are attached to the extraordinary form or women who wear chapel veils or people who think that the Latin Mass provided an incredible array of spiritual gifts and so on. We're talking about something more, what's the word? Radical. How would you define a rad trad?
Yeah, and I do want to take a couple minutes on this because tradition is so absolutely crucial for us as Catholics, and biblically speaking, right? St. Paul says, hold fast to the traditions you have been taught, either by word or written letter. In 2 Thessalonians 2:15, we as Catholics uphold the absolute essential nature of the tradition, I'll say with a big T, that was given to us 2,000 years ago, along with sacred scripture, that is the revelation, the fullness of the revelation that Jesus Christ has communicated to us for the salvation of souls. And tradition then develops in the church and our understanding of the tradition, as well as sacred scripture, over 2,000 years. And so we also, in another sense, Patrick, have 2,000 years of tradition in that sense. So it's absolutely crucial for us. It is of an organic nature in the church that the tradition grows. In fact, Jesus talks about the kingdom of heaven being like a mustard seed. a mustard seed, which he says is the smallest of all seeds. Of course, he wasn't a botanist. Mm-hmm. But it, when it grows, it becomes this glorious plant. So tradition, we can see, is something that organically grows in the church. It's essential for the life of the church. And so for someone to say that they're a traditional Catholic, I mean, that's two thumbs up. Because, you know, in a sense, Patrick, that's the only kind of Catholic there is.
And to that extent, it's redundant to put traditional in front of it.
Exactly. But unfortunately, Patrick, I have friends, in fact, I'm thinking of one friend in particular, who was raised in what would be termed a traditionalist family. They were in union with the church. Mm-hmm. In fact, his parents were part of the priestly fraternity of St. Peter, which maybe we'll talk about later.
Yes.
Which are traditionalist Catholics in union with the Pope. But he today doesn't even like to go by the term traditionalist because, unfortunately, this is his words, the term has been hijacked by people who really are not traditional Catholics at all. When we talk about radical traditionalists, we're talking about people who end up in saying that they're holding on to tradition, deny the tradition. Some of the most important traditions of the church, including what Vatican I defined infallibly in 1870 in its dogmatic constitution on the church, that the Pope uniquely has supreme, immediate, universal authority in matters not only pertaining to faith and morals, but also discipline in the church. The ironic thing is, this is something so essential to Catholics, that means that we are bound as Catholics to follow not only what the Pope declares or bishops in union with the Pope declare definitively on faith and morals, but also disciplinary matters. Now, the radical traditionalists about whom we are going to speak began after Vatican Council II. Now, we'll speak of other kinds of radical traditionalists as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the movement really was spearheaded after the council, and it centered on matters of a disciplinary nature, juridical matters, not matters of faith and morals. Unfortunately, as it has often been said in the church, heresies often begin with schism, that is, over matters of discipline, but ultimately you end up denying the faith and becoming a heretic, which many traditionalists have done, because they end up going to such an extreme that they deny an essential teaching of the church, like the Pope's supreme authority. So we want to delineate here between the traditionalists who are in union with the church. You know, I mentioned the fraternity of St. Peter. We have friends, in fact, a priest has been on this broadcast from the fraternity, Father Gismondi. In fact, he's been in this office many times here locally. They are a wonderful, you know, and completely unate group that actually came from the original folks who split from the church, but they are in union with the church. We have to delineate them from those who have taken it too far to the point of denying even essential teaching of the church. They deny the discipline, the juridical authority, the plenary and immediate juridical authority of the Pope.
Now, the most extreme form of that would be sede vacantism, the belief that the Pope is not even the real Pope.
Right.
Most sede vacantists put that liminal shift in 1958, and they believe that the last legitimate Pope was Venerable Pius XII. That's the more extreme form. After the break, we'll get to the more moderate forms, if I can put it that way, of radical traditionalists, and what qualities are there to spot and how to bring them around into loving the whole tradition of the Catholic Church. This is Catholic Answers Live. My name is Patrick Coffin, your host. Tim Staples, the Director of Apologetics and Evangelization, is our guest for both hours. Whether or not you identify as a radical traditionalist or a traditional Catholic and you want to get some clarification on our definitions, we want to hear from you. 888-31-TRUTH, 1-888-318-7884. On the other side of the break, more information on our free gift with the publication, the subscription to our Catholic Answers magazine. Lots more to come in the 2 hours with Tim Staples on radical traditionalism. Don't go away.
Call and ask Tim your question on today's Open Forum.
What could be better than expanding your apologetics and evangelization knowledge by learning from Carl Keating, Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, and our other staff and outside writers who contribute to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine? Here's what. During our annual subscription drive going on right now, we'll lavish free Catholic Answers resources on you. Sign up today at 888-291-8000 or online at Catholic.com. When you take out a one-year subscription, we'll include a copy of Patrick Coffin's new audio set, How to Talk to Atheists. Become a two-year subscriber and we'll do even better by sending you a custom Catholic Answers 4-gigabyte flash drive containing over $100 worth of content, including our audio sets, Catholic Answers to Common Objections, The Sword of the Spirit, The Staples versus Greg Debate, How to Talk to Atheists, and The Gift of Miracles, a presentation by Tim Staples that's not available anywhere else. That's a value of over $120 absolutely free when you sign up for a two-year subscription to the most popular magazine of Catholic apologetics and evangelization. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to Catholic.com today.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpin. In Luke 1:39, we read, Mary set out and traveled to the hill country in haste to a town of Judah, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. Here we have the most sublime meeting between two human beings in the history of the race. It is a meeting of mothers filled with the Holy Spirit. Talk about liberated women. Elizabeth says, How is it that the mother of my Lord should come to me? And some question why Catholics call Mary the Mother of God. Ask Elizabeth. Mary says, My soul magnifies the Lord. Like a magnifying glass, she makes the Lord more visible by her fidelity as well as by her offspring. The effects of that meeting reach out to all eternity, and yet the passage ends in understatement. Mary remained with her about 3 months and then returned home. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Okay, so radical traditionalism, that's our topic with Tim Staples, the whole 2 hours of the show. I want to mention that if you sign up today for a subscription to our Catholic Answers magazine, this is a great nuts and bolts, very practical resource. It comes to your door every month or so. If you subscribe now for a year, we're going to give you a CD set. In fact, I'm just learning now, it's my CD set, my interview with America's premier exorcist, Father Gary Thomas. Just got an email today from Father Thomas. He is the mandated exorcist for the Diocese of San Jose, California. And you know what? That's the atheist one. Ha ha. You see the tie-in here?
There you go.
Atheism and the devil are not necessarily on separate planets. How to Talk to Atheists, not the exorcism CD. Let me just quickly segue to a gear change. That is a even bigger, more gargantuan gift, and that is a 3-CD interview conducted by me with former atheist Jennifer Fulweiler, now one of the top Catholic bloggers in the world, and she's also an author. And Jennifer talked to me about the personal aspect, how to deal with family members and friends who have lost their faith or who grew up like she did in an atheist home. Father Robert Spitzer talked about the scientific findings, latest tidbits from physics, how the Big Bang theory, promulgated by people like Father Georges Lemaître, have offered stunning proof of the beginning of the universe, which is very important for the proof that God exists. And finally, Protestant philosopher, a brilliant, wonderful Christian man, Dr. William Lane Craig, on the argumentation, how to use philosophy to speak with people about God's existence. So that's free with a one-year subscription. Two-year subscription, the gift is a flash drive. I'm looking at it. It's a beautiful, sleek. It has our new logo. It is a 4-gigabyte flash drive with our new logo, and the content is Tim, because most of it's your good stuff. What is it?
Yeah, well, you're going to get Catholic Answers to Common Objections, Sword of the Spirit, where I defend the 6 most essential Catholic teachings in Sacred Scripture, Staples versus Greg, which is a 5-day debate that I did with an evangelical a few years ago.
But it's not 24 hours times 5, Tim, right?
That's right. And the Gift of Miracles also, which is a brand new talk. You can't get it anywhere else other than here. And that is a talk I've actually given several times now, where I demonstrate the importance of knowing the gifts of miracles that we have for evangelistic reasons. You know, Patrick, the one complaint I have with my friend Matt Dula, Sergeant Matt Dula, who helped me went a long way toward leading me into the Catholic faith, is, man, why didn't you tell me about the miracles? There is an enormous wealth of miracles in the church. I pick out some of my favorite miracles that you can use to evangelize your friends. But we also talk about what a miracle is, what it is not. And I also bring up some miracles that I'll guarantee you some of you guys haven't heard of.
Okay, to get connected with all that good stuff, call 888-291-8000, 291-8000 with the 888 prefix, or go to Catholic.com. Okay, Tim, so the more radical form of radical traditionalism is sede vacantism, that
yes.
the Pope is not in the chair, not in the seat of Peter.
Right.
But the lesser forms that are still pernicious and still right. against the gospel are things like endless bitter complaining about
yes.
the Second Vatican Council, the yes. sarcastic kind of recriminations against what they call the Novus Ordo, with
sure.
sort of a distaste, the ordinary
yeah.
form.
And, you know, as a matter of history, Patrick, sede vacantism came out of exactly what you're talking about. After the council, and many of our listeners know Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, he is known as the father of this movement, and he is the founder of the Priestly Society of St. Pius X. Which is this a group that, according to Pope Benedict, has no canonical standing in the church as a result of their split with us. But here's the key. Archbishop Lefebvre was actually at the Council of Vatican II.
Yes, he was.
Signed
he was a council father. Mm-hmm.
Signed all 16 documents. And it would be after the council and after Archbishop Lefebvre would have retired that some seminarians in Switzerland came to him saying, hey, the church is blowing up. You know, we need you to help us. Now, he didn't have a see. He was a retired bishop, and so he petitioned the local bishop there in Freiburg, Switzerland, to start this group, which at first had the approbation of the church. He started a fraternity that was going to have as its aim, you know, sort of preserving the tradition, but it was in union with the church. Well, quickly problems started there. This is like 1969, 1970. By 1972, there were large problems. The successor of the then bishop came in and had all kinds of problems with Lefebvre, because it's exactly what you said, Patrick. It began with, we want to preserve tradition, but it then starts to ebb its way toward denying the authority of the Vatican Council and mm-hmm. ultimately the authority of the Pope. And that's where the problem starts. As they start saying more and more radical things, by 1975, the local bishop there removed his approbation. And, you know, you're effectively prohibited from celebrating the sacraments already by that time. But 1 year later, Pope Paul VI would suspend Archbishop Lefebvre a divini, which means that he could not offer the sacraments licitly, and the problems began to escalate.
So this predates the 1988
yes.
ipso facto excommunication because of the schismatic act of ordaining
right.
those four bishops.
That's right.
By almost a generation.
That's right. He illicitly ordained some priests, which brought about automatically you're suspended ad divini. Mm-hmm. You're not excommunicated. But what would happen is this thing would escalate. Now, Pope Paul VI would die, of course, in 1978. John Paul comes in.
Yeah.
And he picks up and really bent over backwards trying to reconcile, and there was actually hope that there would be a reconciliation. Cardinal Ratzinger would be on board with that shortly thereafter.
His involvement would resurface later, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. But what ends up happening is the escalation factor. And finally, as you mentioned, in 1988, Archbishop Lefebvre, after John Paul had bent over backwards and said, look, I'll allow you to even ordain one bishop. You know, let's just not do this. Don't go into schism. But unfortunately, Lefebvre did, and many believe that he wanted to go into schism because he believed that he had to do this in order to preserve the tradition. You know, the axiom that he coined is where there is crisis, there is no law. And so I'm not bound by the Pope, which, again, you're ending up now denying an essential teaching of the Church from Vatican I that we mentioned before, you know, in session three. I mean, this is an infallible declaration of the Church. If anyone says a Roman pontiff has merely an office of supervision and guidance and not the full and supreme power of jurisdiction over the whole Church, and this is not only in matters of faith and morals, but also in those which concern the discipline and government of the Church dispersed throughout the world, or that he has only the principal part, but not the absolute fullness of this supreme power, or that this power of his is not ordinary and immediate, both over all and each of the churches, over all and each of the pastors and faithful, let him be anathema. You can't get around this. When the Pope tells you, because he has supreme, plenary, immediate authority, even in matters disciplinary, full juridical authority, well, he denies that in his action, and canonically, he was automatically excommunicated along with the four bishops that he illicitly ordained. Now, this was a tragedy and is a tragedy in the Church because we're talking about Catholics who really love tradition. They love the Blessed Mother like we do, the seven that have the seven sacraments and such, and they're so dear to us and close to us that it pains us all the more when they are separated. Now, thanks be to God, as many of our listeners know, Pope Benedict just recently, just what, four years ago now, in 2009, lifted the excommunications, even though in that same document the Pope says they have no canonical standing. What Pope Benedict is doing is saying, look, let's get rid of the inflammatory language. We'll get rid of everything we can. I like to say analogous to what Patriarch Athenagoras and Paul VI did in 1965 when they lifted the mutual excommunications. It wasn't saying, as has been falsely reported, in fact, I was online just before going on the air here, and I was looking at one radical traditionalist website who declared after the lifting of the excommunications that here the Pope has said that, you know, the society is completely in union with the Church, they're in the Church, and all of this, which, of course, is not true. They're not in full communion with the Church, and they, in that same document, as I mentioned, Pope Benedict said they have no canonical standing, and so this creates all kind of problems.
Like the problem of getting your sins forgiven in confession.
Yeah, this is a huge problem, because even though they have valid sacraments, they have a valid Eucharist, when it comes to things like marriages and confession, you have to have the approbation of the local bishop in order for those sacraments to be valid. So that is a huge problem, because what you have today are a number of Catholics who will go to some of these chapels, which they have. And remember, they don't have churches. They don't have, you know, they're sort of
I never thought about that.
Yeah, they don't.
SSBX chapel.
Yeah, they have chapels all around, and they're technically a fraternity of priests. Yeah. So the people that are going there aren't really members. They're just attending the chapel. So this, too, provides all kind of interesting situations canonically, because the Church handles with kid gloves those that are going there, many of them unwittingly. The Church has said, we cannot recommend that you go there. And if anyone actually imbibes their schismatic mindset, then they would be, in fact, in sin. And again, some of the sacraments aren't valid. So it is a huge problem.
I'll mention a couple other traits, and then we'll turn to calls. Yeah. One trait that I've noticed, Tim, is a very rigid, I would say, over-rigorous understanding of the dogma, extra ecclesia nulla salus, outside the Church, no salvation.
Yes.
They take a jaundiced view of the teaching of the Council of Trent as to baptism of desire.
Yes.
And it borders on,
even though Trent mentions desire with regard to baptism and confession that one has to receive. Yeah. If one commits a mortal sin, says the Council of Trent, one has to receive the sacrament either actually or by desire. Mm-hmm. Same with baptism. But they hold to it, many of them.
Yes.
Many of them hold to a very, very rigid view of that. So there's all kinds of problems, and we'll get to a lot more after the break.
Yeah, and a definite non-love for the Jews is another thing we'll get to. I'm sure it'll come up in the next 2 hours. Radical traditionalism, that's our topic with Tim Staples and me, your host, Patrick Coffin, right here on Catholic Answers Live. Be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We all know that talking to young people about, well, anything can be difficult. But bringing up matters of faith and God and Jesus and the church, you may as well give up, right? But what if someone could give you a tool that would help you reach the teens and young adults in your sphere of influence? You'd grab it up in a minute, right? Look no further. We've got just the thing. Pick up a copy today of The Truth Is Out There, Brendan and Irk in Exile, and see how Catholic Answers has taken something old and made it new again. A graphic novel with high-quality illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow. The Truth Is Out There follows our heroes, Brendan and Irk, as they travel through time and the universe, discovering the meaning of life, the existence of God, Jesus Christ, and finally, the Catholic Church. Get your teens talking about things that matter. It's a whole new way to reach a whole new generation. Get your copy today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging on to Catholic.com.
If you like to keep up on the thoughts of well-known Catholics, chances are you have bookmarks for dozens of your favorite bloggers. It's always good to get a variety of different perspectives on issues that you care about. Well, now there's a place where with just one click, you can get a glimpse inside the minds of an all-star lineup of prominent Catholics. Introducing the Daily Blogs at Catholic.com, where you can get the rock-solid Catholic position on current events and more from people like Carl Keating, Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Patrick Coffin, Hector Molina, Trent Horn, Matt Frad, Peggy Fry, Christopher Check, and more. With those great thinkers posting on our blogs each day, you're sure to find several topics of interest every time you log on. Check out the blogs at Catholic.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, where we love sacred tradition. We love the extraordinary form of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. We love the Rosary. We love public pro-life witness. We love bold Catholics who are not afraid to say that they love Jesus Christ and want to bring everyone into the church that he founded. Today we're talking about radical traditionalism, what it is, what it isn't, with you, the caller, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's the toll-free number. We'd love to hear from you. Tim Staples, the guest, both hours. Let's go straight to call, shall we, Mr. S.? That'd be your cue to say,
that's
yes,
my
Patrick,
cue.
Great idea.
Yes, Patrick, let's do that.
Okay, Tim. Where we drank our awkward juice this morning, didn't we?
That's right.
Jeremiah in Des Moines, Iowa on KWKY. You're on the air. Welcome, sir.
Hey, thanks.
Hey,
welcome.
So my question was about the Society of St. Pius X.
Yes.
And so you say they don't have a canonical status, but I guess if they did, I'm kind of curious as to whether they'd be going closer to a heresy or a schism, and really what the difference is practically between those two, and how the SSPX would be different from, say, the Eastern Rites that are in schism.
Right.
Just kind of what the difference would be between, say, you know, my friend who's Greek Rite or Greek Orthodox, as opposed to someone who's a member of the SSPX.
Right. Right. Well, Jeremiah, it's a great question. And I think we have to say, first of all, that I just wanted to clarify something in your question. When we're talking about the Orthodox, we're not talking about Eastern Rites. Eastern Rite churches are unate. They're in union with us. But you're talking about Eastern Orthodox churches. Well, the Society of St. Pius X is much closer to us than the Orthodox, in that the Orthodox outright deny 14 of the 21 ecumenical councils. They deny the authority of the Pope. I mean, the SSPX, they believe in the Pope. They accept at least 20 of the 21 councils. And where we're at right now with the SSPX is it's technically no longer a schism, even though we had the four excommunications. That was definitely as Pope John Paul II declared in 1988 a schismatic act when Archbishop Lefebvre illicitly ordained those four bishops. However, since the lifting of the excommunication, there certainly and have been in a unique situation canonically, or trying to figure where do they fit, you know, in the ecumenical directory that we have. They're in kind of a unique situation because they do acknowledge the authority of the Pope. There's the question about what they believe about Vatican II, and in fact, they are denying the authority of Vatican II as well as the Pope, but the discussions are going on. And so as long as the discussions are going on, you know, the church is very careful in the way that she speaks about the SSPX. You won't hear the church say they are heretics. The church has not said that. In fact, now, even though there is a, you know, the church will say there is a schismatic mentality, and we have to be careful that those who attend those chapels in any situation, even in an emergency situation, even though the church does not recommend people go there, theoretically someone could if there was no other valid mass available, similar to our position with the Orthodox. Catholics can go there, but the church warns against imbibing that schismatic attitude. And so I think, Jeremiah, this gets back to what we were talking about at the outset, is the movement began, you know, much more innocently, you know, in this attempt to preserve tradition, but ended up going further and further and further until there was that split and finally the schismatic act and the excommunication. And then some of the followers have gone even farther and become actual outright heretics, like the Sede Vacantis, who believe, most of them, there has not been a valid pope since 1958 when Pope Pius XII died. There you're talking about actual heresy. And that kind of came out of this movement. And then, you know, you had the Society of St. Pius V that was formed that believed this way. And now there have been others. And we just recently had a split with the SSPX. And so right now, Jeremiah, I think we need to pray for the members of the Society of St. Pius X, because there is dialogue going on. And we are praying for full reunion and communion, hopefully soon. But unfortunately, you know, there has been some negative signs of late. It seems like, you know, just when you get your hopes up, well, maybe something's going to happen, you know, it turns out that nothing indeed does happen. So we're at a place of prayer right now, praying for them. And I think what we need to do is to help them, if you have friends that attend those chapels and such, hey, this is what we're about as Catholics. We need to clear up the misconceptions. And remember that every single misconception of the SSPX is answerable, and we have the answers as Catholics.
Jeremiah, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mike in Topeka, Kansas, one of our loyal podcasters. Hello, Mike. You're on the air, sir.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was really looking forward to this show. I've got number of family members who are involved in kind of the Sede Vacantis circles. My parents kind of left the church roughly 10 to 20 years ago, and they've kind of pulled two of my sisters into that orbit. You know, outside of prayer and fasting for my parents, I think it's a tough sell because they're so entrenched in this. But my sisters are somewhat receptive to coming back, but there's a lot of problems and a lot of doubts. So I was kind of, basically my question is maybe some more practical advice on how to evangelize them back into the church.
Mike, just to make sure that Tim's scratching them where they itch, how would you phrase the top objection? Do they have one thing or one theme or issue that keeps arising?
Well, you know, they have a lot of discomfort about the Sede Vacantis group because of some of the extremism and anti-Semitism. So they're not comfortable there, but my parents, I think, have sowed enough doubt as to possibly the validity of post-Vatican II ordinations.
Gotcha.
And
right.
Possibly the validity of the sacrament. So one of my sisters, for example, brought up the question of the changing of the translation to English, you know, be given up for many as opposed to all, and changing the words of the consecration renders it invalid. So they kind of, what they ended up doing, they're not buying the Sede Vacanti is flying completely, but they kind of feel like it's safer to stay.
Gotcha. Mike, I think Tim has his arm around it. We were just talking about a book earlier today off the air, The Pope, the Mass, and the Council.
The Pope, the Council, and the Mass.
Not necessarily in that order, by our friends Jim Lacoutis and Ken Whitehead. Well, that's it, The Pope, the Council, and the Mass. There it is.
Excellent book. In fact, they wrote it a couple decades ago, and it just had a new version of it come out. In fact, I just read it. It's outstanding, but both the original and this new one. But they get into a lot of detail on questions like these. So I think, Mike, that with the Sede Vacantis, what you have is a fundamental loss of faith that is rooted in a lot of little things. It's, you know, Song of Solomon says it's the little foxes that spoil the vine. Well, some of these are not quite such little foxes. Some of them are big foxes here that end up spoiling the vine. But they kind of peck at you until finally, well, the whole thing goes up in smoke. There's two ways to approach them, I have found. Number one is to approach them from something that you and I and they would agree on. You know, the infallible teaching of the church, such as from Vatican I, you know, which we all believe is infallible. When in the Constitution on the Church in Chapter 3 of Vatican I, this would be in Session 4, Chapter 2. It says, therefore, if anyone says that it is not by the institution of Christ the Lord himself, that is to say by divine law, that Blessed Peter should have perpetual successors in the primacy over the whole church, or that the Roman pontiff is not the successor of Blessed Peter in this primacy, let him be anathema. The key there is that the church declared infallibly that there would be perpetual successors. Now, one big problem that Sede Vacantis have is that in order for... See, there's an old axiom. In fact, interesting, you'll find this in books like by Patrick Henry Amlor, who's one of the godfathers of the Sede Vacantis movement. He wrote a book called The Robber Church, which I've also read a couple times. And one principle he lays out in there, actually to show that the Mass is invalid and the Pope is not the Pope, is he lays out an ancient axiom in the church, and this is true, that the law of the church properly promulgated by the Pope or the church in union with the Pope can never lead people into sin. Not because it's infallible, because if you're talking about disciplinary matters, you know, purely juridical, they're not infallible. They can change, in other words, but they can never lead someone into sin, right? Mm-hmm. Well, according to Sede Vacantis, that the new translation and so forth has led to, I mean, I believe they blame the fireman for the fire here, but they blame everything on it, and therefore this can't be valid and so forth. But in fact, we can argue that the law of the church was specific before the reign of John the 23rd as to how successors of the Bishop of Rome would be elected. The Pope alone has the authority to declare how his successors are to be chosen. Mm-hmm. Well, Pope Pius XII issued a decree that definitively laid down, this is how my successor will be chosen. And that has since been revised by John Paul II and by Benedict. But Pius XII did. Well, in order for there to be a validly elected Pope, there have to be cardinals that were created by the Pope. There's age limitation and all sorts of things that that are in that law. Well, in saying that Pius XII was the last valid pope, well, that's fine, but when the last cardinal dies that he had created, and there was no more cardinals created by a validly elected pope, then you don't have a legal way to elect his successor. And so, therefore, you blow up this infallible statement of the church that says, by the institution of Christ the Lord himself, Blessed Peter should have perpetual successors in the primacy over the whole church. Now, I find with, you know, and I've read many Sede Vacantis that will say, well, you know, Cardinal Bellarmine has theorized that perhaps in a case of an emergency, the universal church could elect a successor. Perhaps, you know, because the methodology has changed over the years, perhaps. But that is not the teaching of the church. This is speculation by a man 500 years ago. What does the law of the church say? The law of the church could never lead us astray. And so you have a big problem there. I like to start there with getting people thinking, look, Jesus said, I will give you the keys of the kingdom. Jesus said the gates of hell shall not prevail. Vatican I defined infallibly there will be perpetual successors. And if you start there, you say, look, you know, I believe what the Catholic Church teaches to be revealed by God because they are established, the Catholic Church was established by Jesus Christ. I am not the one, and the church has been so clear on this throughout the centuries that you and I, Patrick, or even an individual bishop or cardinal, we do not have the authority to sit in judgment of the decrees of ecumenical councils and popes. Mm-hmm. We believe them not because we necessarily have full understanding. We accept them in faith. Why? Because of the authority of God who can neither deceive nor be deceived. So I think if you begin there, then you can move into, okay, we establish this as a principle, all right? But now let's get into the particulars, okay? You have a problem with the validity of Mass. Maybe after the break we can talk about that.
Yeah. And much else besides. Mike in Topeka, thanks for the call. I hope that was a help. That was a lot. Tim, true or false, a good synonym for radical traditionalism is high church Protestantism.
Woo. You're going to get some fired up calls over that one. But, you know, ultimately.
Arrogating to oneself the role of arbiter that only belongs to the Roman pontiff.
Yeah. Ultimately, and that's the irony of the thing.
Right.
Because you begin with trying to defend the tradition, and nobody can change the tradition. And what do you end up doing? Denying the tradition. It's like if you go further to the right, you're going to eventually end up on the left. And that's ultimately, it's ironic because the radical traditionalists and the modernists end up in the same camp because they both ultimately deny the authority of the church.
We want to hear from you on radical traditionalism for the balance of this hour and the next hour with our guest, Tim Staples, Director of Apologetics and Evangelization here at Catholic Answers. Our website is catholic.com. The number to reach him is toll-free, 888-31-TRUTH, 1-888-318-7884. Oh, so much more to come. Can't wait to hear from you here on Catholic Answers Live. Be right back.
Tim's just a phone call away today on Catholic Answers Live.
When it comes to cruises, there's no shortage of options. You can sail just about anywhere in the world with just about anyone you choose. And for the most part, if you decide wisely, you'll have a pretty good time. But a Catholic Answers cruise is something altogether unique, especially this fall's Catholic Answers Defending the Faith cruise. Why? Here are just a few reasons. Our inspiring program that'll feature some of the most vibrant Catholic speakers in the country. Lively question and answer sessions. Personal interaction with our guest speakers. Private receptions. A book signing party. And a dedicated cruise chaplain for confessions and daily mass. Need I say more? Catholic Answers has been the leader in Catholic cruises for over a decade. Maybe that explains why our cruisers keep coming back year after year. Isn't it time you discovered Catholic Answers cruises for yourself? Join us November 2nd through 9th for the Catholic Answers Defending the Faith cruise on the Caribbean. Register soon at 800-707-1634 or CatholicAnswersCruise.com.
Dolores Hart was a beautiful actress who made movies with Elvis Presley, Montgomery Clift, and Anthony Quinn. And in 1963, she stunned Hollywood by entering a contemplative monastery. Now she tells her story in The Ear of the Heart, an actress's journey from Hollywood to Holy Vows from Ignatius Press. It's filled with publicity photos and poignant episodes from the life of a soul in search of God. Order at 800-651-1531, Ignatius.com, or at a Catholic bookstore.
Remember Catholic.com, your 24/7 source for the best apologetics and evangelization information on the web. Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the show. I want to mention something to our Southern California listeners. If you're in San Diego or within driving distance there too, don't miss the Ruth Institute's ITAF Gala. It takes a family. It's an annual conference they have, and the conference this year, it's the fifth annual ITAF conference. It'll be topped off with it's going to be a rockin' time. It's a gala event held at the Town and Country Resort in Hotel Circle in San Diego, Sunday night starting at 6 p.m. Yours truly will be the MC for this gigantic event. And I can't wait to hear the keynote speaker is a former special FBI agent and Hollywood stuntman and Hollywood producer. His name is Tim Clemente. So that is Sunday night starting at 6 p.m. in San Diego. Go to ruthinstitute.org and find out information on the ITAF Gala, ruthinstitute.org.
You know,
Tim Staples.
Patrick, it just came to my attention that I forgot to mention something about our free gifts with the purchase of a subscription to Catholic Answer Magazine. You mentioned that a one-year subscription will get you a free copy of How to Talk to Atheists.
Your CD set.
Your CD set, which is a $20 value, by the way, you're getting for free. But with a two-year subscription, we mentioned the 4 gigabyte flash drive with our new logo. We have $125 worth of,
loaded on.
Of mm-hmm. stuff loaded on here. And I failed to mention one of the gifts.
In my humility, I said nothing.
It's Catholic Answers to Common Objections, my CD set, dealing with 20 of the most often received questions here at Catholic Answers. Sword of the Spirit, defending 6 essential teachings of the Catholic Church. Staples versus Gregg, a 5-day debate that I did with an evangelical Steve Gregg. And I failed to mention How to Talk to Atheists. That's going to be in there as well, whether you get the 1 year or the 2 years. So you're getting How to Talk to Atheists and then the talk, Gift of Miracles, which is only available through this.
Thank you for that. I'm glad my okay. my implicit threat worked. Yeah, 888-291-8000. That's the order line, 888-291-8000, or go to Catholic.com. All right, back to radical traditionalism and your calls thereon with Stan in Harrisburg, PA on 720 AM. Hello, Stan, you're on the air.
Jim and Pat,
hey.
I have a question. In Vatican II, when they changed the mass, and went to the Novus Ordo Mass.
Stan, let's go one at a time. Tim, did the Second Vatican Council jettison the extraordinary form and implant the vernacular Mass?
Right. No, and Stan, that's a very important point. It wasn't that the Mass was changed. The Mass is substantially, essentially the same Mass. It was revised. The Roman Missal, the Ordo Missae, was revised, but substantially, you have the same Mass. But go ahead, Stan. You were about to say.
Regarding the radical traditionalist viewpoint, because many of them would contend that the taking of the bread in hands, or the allowing of taking of bread in hands was against long-standing church teaching.
The Holy Communion.
Right, right. Well, Stan, that's a very important point. But we have to make a distinction here, Stan, between dogmas of the faith that can't change and disciplinary matters that are purely juridical that can. Now, the receiving communion on the tongue actually is a very ancient practice. We know, in fact, there's a famous quote from St. Cyril of Jerusalem where he instructs people in the 4th century as to how to do it. He says, to make a throne with your left hand, place your right hand on top of the left, and receive the King of Glory, the implication being there, then you take it directly to your mouth so that there's no self-communication. But nevertheless, that's an ancient practice that has been, as you mentioned, it's allowed now by indult. You are correct. I mean, the ordinary way of receiving is on the tongue, no doubt. And that has never changed. The ordinary way that we receive communion in the Latin Rite in the church is on the tongue. The communion in the hand was permitted by indult. And there are many people who believe the fruits have not been so good about that. And we will wait for the decision of the church as to whether that remains. But that's an important point, isn't it, Patrick, that folks know the ordinary way of receiving is on the tongue. But we don't want to go so far as to say, well, because the church is allowing this now, well, the church lost her authority. She's not the church anymore. Well, because what would you say of Cyril of Jerusalem and many who received in the hand all those years ago? Now, of course, this is not something that is essential. It's not a deal breaker for us. It's a matter of discipline.
The Abbott translation of the Second Vatican Council documents, not the Flannery, but the Abbott, used to have an appendix at the back that showed the voting patterns when this question came up during the council.
Right.
I believe it's 80% of the bishops at the time did not favor communion in the hand.
Correct.
That's an important historical point.
It is. But what we have to understand as Catholics is when Holy Mother Church decides, then she decides, and you and I, we can, as canon law paragraph or canon 212 says, we have the right as Catholics, and it says in accordance with our competence as well, to let our spiritual concerns be made known to the church, to ask questions and such. But ultimately, you have to get to the point, Patrick, where you say, you know what, the church has said it, and therefore, I'm fine with it. I may have reservations and such about matters disciplinary like this, but we have to be very careful that we don't allow bitterness to enter in. We should receive these both teachings and disciplines of the church, understanding the church has, she is our mother. And just because we don't understand why she's allowing these things doesn't mean she's wrong and we're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to receive these disciplines with docility and recognize the church has the authority to do it.
And that they're changeable.
They are.
These are not eternal things set in stone.
They are not. But even there, we have to be careful because, as you know, things like married clergy are theoretically changeable. But the church has made very clear in her law, in canon law. In fact, I remember Pope John Paul in 1979, when he first became pope, he issued a statement on that, you know, reiterating that this is a cherished tradition. In other words, it's not going anywhere. Now, when a new pope comes in, there's canonical procedures. If people want, you know, to get a bishop to be on your side and do the canonical work to let the question be made known to the new pontiff, you can do that. But we have to be very careful that we're not causing dissension in the church by running around saying, I don't agree with the married clergy thing, because then we end up on the wrong side of the church.
And I've heard theoretically, if you strap Pratt Whitney engines on the side of a pig and have the pig flap, the pig could fly. I mean, it's theoretically possible.
That's right.
All right, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's the toll-free number. Stan, we've got just a moment left. I think you may have had another question, or is that cover it, Stan?
Yes, I have one other question. You alluded to it at the beginning of the hour regarding no salvation outside the church, regarding radical traditionalism.
Yes.
And the treatment of the Jews,
yes,
as well as certain Protestant denominations,
sure,
and Muslims.
What's your question on that, Stan?
Yeah, because we're almost out of time.
My question is this: okay, now, do Jews have to become Catholic?
Right. Well, Stan, what the Catholic Church teaches is that if a person is where they are through no fault of their own, they've never rejected the truth of the Catholic faith that has been made known to them, they have the possibility. In fact, the Holy Office issued a decree in 1949 when a problem arose in this very matter by a priest named Leonard Feeney in the Archdiocese of Boston. The church declared that a person can be saved, has the possibility of salvation, if they are what is termed invincibly ignorant, which means not just ignorant, but not responsible for their ignorance, and they cooperate with the grace of God that's given in their life in ways known to God alone, perhaps, with perfect charity and supernatural faith, they have the possibility of salvation. The church, I think maybe we'll have to do that in the next segment. I can't go any further than that.
No.
Yeah. We're out of time.
Stan, thanks for the call. Maybe before we launch into the second hour, Jesus Christ is the Jewish Messiah in a double sense. He was Jewish, as Archie Bunker said on his mother's side, but he's also the salvation of everyone, including the Jews. There's no special category here.
Absolutely. So everybody needs Jesus, Patrick.
I see a bumper sticker industry. 888-31-TRUTH, that's the number. Coming up next, hour number two with Tim Staples on radical traditionalism. 1-888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back. Don't miss it.